He took the stand on Friday afternoon, April 8th, and immediately launched into a windy lecture loaded with scientific terms and words, designed more to impress the jurors than to inform them. Dennis, with a college degree and experience teaching science, could not follow Het, and he was certain the jurors couldn't either. He glanced at them several times. They were hopelessly lost, but they were obviously impressed with this expert. He knew so much. Het tossed out words like morphology, cortex, scale protrusion, shallow gapping, cortical fuci, and ovoid bodies, as if everyone in the courtroom knew exactly what he meant. He seldom slowed long enough to explain himself. Het was the star expert, with an aura of reliability that was bolstered by his experience, vocabulary, confidence, and strong conclusions that some of the known hairs of Dennis Fritz were consistent with some of those found at the crime scene. 6 times during his direct testimony, he said that Dennis's hair and the suspicious hairs were microscopically consistent and could have come from the same source. Not once did he share with the jury the truth that the hairs could have just as easily not come from the same source. Throughout his testimony, Bill Peterson continually referred to the defendant, Ron Williamson, and the defendant, Dennis Fritz. At the time, Ron was locked away in solitary confinement, strumming his guitar, completely unaware that he was being tried in absentia and that things were not going too well. Het wrapped up his testimony by summarizing for the jury his findings. 11 pubic hairs and 2 scalp hairs could have come from Dennis. It was the same 11 pubic hairs he'd driven to the McCrone Laboratories in Chicago and shown to Richard Bisbing for a second opinion. The cross-examination by Greg Saunders yielded little. Het was forced to admit that hair analysis is too speculative to be used for positive identifications. Like most experts, he was able to talk his way out of tough questions by using his endless supply of vague scientific terms. When he was excused, the state rested. The first witness called by the defense was Dennis Fritz. He testified about his past, his friendship with Ron, and so on. He admitted that he had been convicted of cultivating marijuana in 1973 and had lied about this on his application to teach school at Noble 7 years later. His reason for doing so was simple. He needed a job. He denied repeatedly that he had ever met Debbie Carter and certainly knew nothing about her murder. He was then handed over to Bill Peterson for cross-examination. There's an old adage in bad trial lawyering that when you don't have the facts, do a lot of yelling. Peterson stomped to the podium, glared at the murderer with the suspicious hair, and began yelling. Within seconds, Judge Jones called him to the bench for a little chastising. "You may not like this defendant," the judge whispered sternly, "but you're not to be angry in this courtroom." "I'm not angry," Peterson angrily shot back. "Yes, you are. This is the first time you've raised your voice to this bench." "All right." Peterson was incensed that Fritz had lied on a job application. Thus, Dennis simply could not be believed. And Peterson dramatically produced another lie, a form Dennis had filled out when he hawked a pistol at a pawn shop in Durant, Oklahoma. Again, Dennis had tried to hide his felony for cultivating pot. 2 clear incidences of outright deception. Neither, of course, had anything to do with the Carter murder. Peterson harangued him for as much mileage as he could possibly beat out of his self-confessed lying. It was ironic, and would have been comical had things not been so tense, that Peterson worked himself into such an indignant lather over a witness who couldn't tell the truth. This from a prosecutor whose case was built on the testimony of convicts and snitches. When Peterson finally decided to move on, he had no place to go. He hopscotched from the allegations of one prosecution witness to another, but Dennis did a credible job of holding his ground. After a contentious 1-hour cross, Peterson sat down. The only other witness called by Greg Saunders was Richard Bisbing, who explained to the jury that he disagreed with most of the conclusions reached by Melvin Het. It was late on Friday afternoon, and Judge Jones adjourned court for the weekend. Dennis made the short walk back to the jail, changed clothes, and tried to relax in his stuffy rat hole of a cell. He was convinced the state had failed to prove him guilty, but he was far from confident. He had seen the nasty looks from the jurors when they were shown the gruesome crime scene photos. He had watched them as they listened to Melvin Hett and believed his conclusions. For Dennis, it was a very long weekend.